Okay, let's get going. We have a nice full house today, which is good. Good to see everybody here. Thank you for attending. What we usually do is have a little pre-lecture discussion, and then Ralph will start into his lecture. So be patient. So first thing I always ask is if there's any questions about any of the material that from previous lectures or anything that crossed your mind that I might be able to answer. Okay, everybody's smart today. So today I want to get into a little bit of humor, and I mentioned John Callahan in my first lecture, and this guy is a cartoonist, and he's also a wheelchair user and a quadriplegic, and he's been around for a while, and he's got some really interesting work. So if you I encourage you to go on the internet and check out some of his drawings, and I think he has a couple books as well. And this is my favorite one. It says, "Don't worry, he won't get far on foot." And so there's a wheelchair in the middle of a desert there with cactus and stuff, and the posse obviously looking for whoever was in that wheelchair. And this is sort of a parody on, the posse coming upon a horse with no rider. Front wheel is in the soil. Yeah. So that's pretty cute. Then somebody went and built this redneck wheelchair, which has a very hefty tread on it. And there wasn't any additional information to see if this was built for a purpose or just on a lark or really made for maximum mobility. There it is.
There's a whole bunch of little videos online.
Okay.
Of her blasting through streams and across the snow.
That's pretty awesome. It's great. You know, if you need mobility, you might as well have the maximum mobility you can build, right?
Get into a house pretty well.
Must play havoc on the floors. Okay. And then there's this other device that I saw. So you notice that, that this is an ice chest back here, and this is actually a gas motor, so it's a self-propelled unit. So, and it's a nice color pink, so that's pretty neat. So, a couple more questions for contemplation. So the first thing that I thought of a couple years ago is, when you talk about diversity, it's not typical that people with disabilities are included in that group. And yesterday when I was doing a image search for under diversity, this was the only image I was able to find that actually had a picture of a disabled person in it in reference to diversity. And I guess when you think about diversity, you think more about diversity in race, religion, and stuff like that than able-bodied and disabled. If anybody has some insight on this, let me know. But I don't know why this is. Okay, next item is, we talked about the wide range of disabilities, and there's been a question whether or not phobias are a disability. Certainly it isn't something physical. It's a mental thing, which is always harder to get at. So what if a fear of flying prevents an individual from working in this chosen profession, like John Madden? He had his bus was his job accommodation. Without his bus, he couldn't do his job. So you might think of that as a disability, a workaround for the disability he had. But I understand that certain kinds of phobias are considered legitimate disabilities, but others aren't. So the answer is that phobias are considered a disability because it can impact a person's well-being and their ability to work or to enjoy life. So But as we heard on Tuesday, there are some virtual reality solutions to help those folks out. Okay, last one is, this is actually a true story about a Stanford physician, and he had a bicycling accident, and he was unable to walk after that, but through therapy he was able to get back walking, but get back standing, but not really walking. So he uses a Segway to facilitate him getting around. But a lot of people, you know, have made fun of him, try to push him off a Segway because he doesn't look disabled. So, comments. What? You heard that? Oh, right. Right. Okay, that sort of brings up the question, you know, how do you spot a person with a disability? And you know, we know a person who's in a wheelchair, we assume that they're disabled. But if a person is walking around or standing, it's not clear. In fact, the symbol for disability is that, you know, the silhouette of a wheelchair. So, I mean, you could have, you know, you can have a hearing disability, you can have a mental disability, and it's not obvious, and so you can't determine who's disabled just by looking at them. And that's the thing with this fellow here. Look, he's a young guy, nice looking, you know, looks pretty whole to me, you know, and he's kind of a guy that you might think would be arrogant and using a Segway just for his own purposes. And, you know, he's at a prestigious place like Stanford and tooling around. I can see where people can mistakenly think he's able-bodied, you know, and just using a Segway to you know, for luxury transportation purposes.
Uh-huh. I have very ambivalent feelings about this particular situation because he made some public statements that were very derogatory toward people with disabilities, essentially saying that he doesn't care what disability advocates say. It's worse to be disabled than to not be disabled. And he's got a lot of issues about disability identity that are not helpful, in my opinion. So it's a very gray situation. I mean, I totally support him being able to use the Segway,
right.
But his attitude about disability is problematic to me.
Is he still
here? I don't know. The statements in the paper were over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think this was from about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I can probably look him up.
He was a resident, so I don't know if he's still here.
Yeah, I can look him up and see if he's still on Stanford Who.
Okay. Since it has the same disability
Oh. And
when I was growing up, my role model was a person with a disability. And a lot easier for me to get on with things when I was 18.
Okay. Well, you know, every person is an individual. So
that might be the perfect vehicle for my stepdad now. I hadn't thought about it. He's had me shopping for schools.
Yeah.
He was a farmer when he became disabled. Oh. He stayed home before because he broke his bones.
Wow.
And they basically pieced him together. And in the process of years of surgery, he learned that he, one, couldn't be a farmer, and two, needed a job where he would just stand up and everybody would give him, hand him whatever he had just dropped. He could stand, but he couldn't get up and down.
Oh, I see. Okay,
nice.
That's good. Well, there's two things there. You know, there's a particular abundance of farmers with disability because they work around very dangerous equipment all the time. And I know that there's a whole group, an organization support group for farmers with disabilities. So that's one issue. Another issue is, you know, the Segway itself is a good platform for robotics or wheelchairs. And I've seen a couple projects using a Segway platform as the mobile part of a wheelchair system. So it's been done before, and I'm not sure how good it is, but you know, you can try it out. Yes, yeah. Oh, I didn't know he had a Segway. Okay, so Brian Higgins is a fellow at the VA who's visually impaired, yeah, and he's been talking to me about biking and just getting around with his visual disability. So I didn't know he had a Segway. So that's neat. I have to come in and have him come in and report on that next year. Anyway, so next Tuesday we're going to have Ed Brode from the VA, and he's the disabled driving instructor there. And he's going to talk to us a little bit more about adapted driving. And not only that, he's going to bring an adapted vehicle along. So for the first part of the talk, we'll probably meet in class and we'll have a slideshow. And then we'll probably go out someplace where his van is and check out the adaptions in person. And it's still light by 5:30, so we'll have some a good time looking at the various aspects of things and how they're installed in the van and whatever. Okay. But today we have my pleasure and our pleasure to have Ralph Hotchkiss. And I've known Ralph for a very long time. I can't even remember when we first met, but it's got to be like early 80s. Yeah, well, I started out here in 79. Yeah, 30 years. Wow. So Ralph Hotchkiss is an inventor and a whirlwind wheelchair designer whose company of the same name designs wheelchairs for use in manufacturing developing countries, and it involves wheelchair riders in all of its projects and activities. The organization's mission is to make it possible for every person in the developing world who needs a wheelchair to obtain one that will lead to their maximum personal independence and integration into society. Ralph is a graduate of Oberlin College and a 1989 MacArthur Foundation Fellow. And I should mention one story that I remember about Ralph. And it was very early on. He said, you know, Dave, you know, I'm a mechanical engineer and I really want to have something that, you know, would be a substitute for my T-square and drafting board, but I want it on my computer. And I, for the life of me, I couldn't understand how such a thing could be possible. So those were he had the idea for computer-aided design probably before computer-aided design became possible with the do you remember that?
Yeah, I still have serial number 1 of AutoCAD as well.
Right, yes, yeah, it was the first user of AutoCAD. Because I remember your books and your drawings and everything. That was great stuff. So without further ado, let's welcome Ralph Hotchkiss. So this is forward. Here's your laser pointer. And
okay. you. So, so Roger and Laurel, you're the oldest friends here. Roger Peterson, we got in trouble back in the 60s in the disability rights movement. We won't tell all those stories, but it was an interesting struggle way back. Laurel, you're responsible for my having a physics degree. And that tracked vehicle reminds me of those days. My first homemade wheelchair was a tracked wheelchair. It was much more compact than the one we saw in the picture. Mine was 3 feet long, 2 feet wide, only 1 foot high, but had a seat that would come from 3 inches off the ground all up to full seating height when I got wherever I was going. It worked to visit my dear friend on the third floor of one of the dormitories at the college. That was when visiting hours were a brand new thing on college campuses. Long before co-ed dorms, the biggest problem that particular vehicle had was it was kind of complicated, electric powered, heavy little thing, and it always tended to break down about 10 p.m. when the visiting hours were over, and it took all night to fix it. And David, I was one of your cheering squad when you were developing those bicycles for people like me.
Yeah, that was Doug Schmott. Yeah.
Yeah, but you were definitely part of that brainstorming team, and it was a lean steer bicycle, a regular two-wheeled bicycle that I could actually ride, and it was great. It was great fun. That was in the early 80s. All the great work that's happened here, starting really in the early 80s, until then, for 30 years, we had a wheelchair monopoly. Very little was happening in the U.S. A little bit in the sports area, mostly people trying to just modify the existing chairs that came from the monopoly company. But for 30 years, wheelchair design project progress, from my perspective, went visibly backwards. The chairs didn't get any better in function, but they got cheaper and weaker. In order to save money, the front forks got weaker, the footrests got weaker. The chairs got more complex because of the demands of the physical rehabilitation professionals and other people who wanted chairs that would be convenient to teach people how to use. But once we learned how to use them, we had a lot of kind of junk on our chairs, swing away footrests, removable armrests that really weren't that necessary. When things took off in the early 80s, when the monopoly was broken by the Carter administration's Justice Department, they filed an antitrust suit, settled it in 79, and they had shown that the monopolist was using a lot of illegal methods of restriction of competition, dumping chairs in other countries. They were selling chairs at very low prices in Europe, England, Canada, Mexico, from their subsidiaries that they had set up there in order to protect their American monopoly, to keep out the foreign competition. But they were selling chairs in England for one-third the price of the same exact chair, same model number in the U.S. And when Americans went to England to buy those chairs, of course, they refused the orders. And that's one of the many acts of illegal restriction of international trade. When the Justice Department settled that lawsuit in 1979, the company swore they had never done anything wrong. It's a consent decree, but promised never to do it again. The venture capital poured into the industry. Within 5 years, we had a couple of dozen of new kinds of wheelchairs in the U.S. The bearings were twice as strong. The costs were half as much, actually half as much in real dollars.
things got much better, but not for most of the world, because most of those new chairs were aluminum, eventually carbon fiber, and now titanium. And they were expensive. They were fancy chairs, great chairs. Good example, your chair. A beautiful chair. Actually, that's one that would have worked in the third world, because yours is chrome moly, steel, repairable in the third world. But all the aluminum ones, all especially now the titanium ones, not repairable outside this country. And I feel real sorry for most of the wheelchair riders in this country, because they're restricted to this country. You go around the world on those chairs, something's likely to happen, especially if you're traveling by public transportation, crossing India, Africa. Something happens to your chair while it's on top of the bus with all the chickens and all the other heavy things. It gets broken. What do you do? In this country, you're supposed to call your call the 800 number, give them your credit card, order a part, and then wait. In other countries, none of those. There's no telephone. There's no credit card. Forget it. It just doesn't happen. And the cost of our chairs, typically in this country now, $1,500 to $4,000 for a good manual wheelchair. Just out of the question of in countries where the wage rate of a good mechanic can be just $1,200 a year, $100 a month. True all over 80% of the world. That's just how it is. And so the vast majority of people in those countries who need wheelchairs, if they have anything, it's a throwaway from the north. It's a hospital chair from U.S. or Europe. And again, I feel sorry for people in the third world who get one of our chairs, because they have all English-sized bearings, which you cannot buy replacements for in virtually any of the developing world. Mexico, which is less and less of a developing country now anyway, is the only country that I know of where you can buy replacements for English-sized bearings. And that's all that our chairs have still in the U.S. European chairs are a little bit more repairable, but still, the bearings, under the old monopoly, the bearings on the rear wheels, front wheels, caster swivels of a chair had about a 300-pound load rating. Well, when I do this, I just put a 1,000-pound shock load, especially if I was on concrete, or if I run into a curb. Too bad we don't have a curb here. Run into it head-on, just whack, trying to climb a curb, but miss a little bit. Stop cold, all the force on one front wheel. Again, 1,000-pound force on the bearings, because the fork multiplies the force. Hit this with 400 pounds, and you have 1,000 pounds on both of these bearings. A little bit more on the bottom than the top, but not much. And so apply that to a 300-pound bearing, of course. One whack, and the only kind of chair you could buy for 30 years in the U.S., I would have wrecked it. In fact, that's what happened to my chair after one half a block. My very first chair, $2,000 in today's money, cost me $300 in 1966, and half a block, and it was beyond repair. Not only did the bottom bearing fail, but the caster barrel, the tube that's welded to the chair, bent backwards and began to fail, began to crack. The fork bent backwards, all from one bump. And, you know, I was going as fast as I could, but that wasn't very fast at that time. I was riding a 50-pound chair on a tilted sidewalk. How fast could that be? A gentle jogging pace, and I destroyed it. So this one has the size of bearings that are now used in the U.S. They've jacked it all the way up to a 500-pound load rating bearing. It may take me 3 or 4 whacks to wreck these. We need 1,000-pound bearings. And for another dime, you can buy a 1,000-pound bearing, but when are they going to do it? Don't know. All the chairs that are made by the people in our network, of course, have a minimum of about an 800-pound bearing and some over 1,000. Depends what sizes and what bolts are available for the stems and the axles. But all the progress in this country really has gone for not for 80% of the potential wheelchair riders in the world. Our chairs are too expensive and too weak. Just not good enough. Whoops. And yeah, 36 million. That's a rough and very conservative estimate of the number of people in developing countries. Again, 4 out of 5 people live there, and there are something like 8 million plus in the developed world, in the wealthy world, who have wheelchairs today. So you can just figure how many people in developing countries must need chairs, and there are only a few hundred thousand. And here's a typical example of the chairs they get when they get them. That's a European chair. It's a design from the 1940s, still made today. And when the bearings are shot, you have a choice of paying the garbage man to take away this bulky thing, or donating it and taking a $300 deduction on your $500 deduction on your income tax. Donating it, it gets sent south. There are some very good nonprofits rebuilding wheelchairs, putting new bearings in them, finding those English-sized bearings, at least for chairs that are on the way down. Of course, once they're used for a while, they break down and there's no way to get the spare parts. There's a lot of work going on in the developing world, and that's what first attracted me in 1979 to work first in Nicaragua. Check out this tricycle, a single side tube. Easy entry from one side of the trike, and a very well chosen gear ratio, a little bit faster than the 1-to-1 that I have on my hand rims. And then we'll multiply that by the ratio of the size of this 20-inch front wheel and the circle of the 14-inch circle of the pedals. And he's got about twice the gear ratio I do, which means he has to push twice as hard to climb a hill. But on the other hand, he's working all the time with both arms. I'm only working 20% of the time with my arms. I get up to a walking speed. Only 1/5 of my time is spent actually pushing. He's spending 100%. Got great leverage. And notice how his steering is way offset from here's his steering column here. And his pedals are set off back. He steers by moving his arms sideways, not just by twisting them, which means that he can have, in America, we have things like this used mostly for sports, for fun, and virtually all of them you pedal like this. But pedaling like legs are made to run, like our front legs are made to run, out of phase is more efficient. You get more power. And in particular, you don't have a dead spot out here, which when I'm pushing a tricycle, I only have 15% as much power here as I do here. I only have 15% as much power when my arms are both extended way out front. Excuse me, Roger, for not using the right words to do it without pictures and show and tell. And with the steering offset, with the steering out ahead or behind the pedals where he's actually doing his steering, his tricycle doesn't zigzag like the Americans would if they didn't have both pedal handles in parallel. So everything on this chair looks right to me, on this tricycle. It's an outdoor machine. Of course, it wouldn't fit indoors very well, but this kid goes 5 kilometers each way to school, and that's not a problem. This is southern India, fairly flat terrain. But he can also climb hills. Of course, the kid on the back pushing helps as well. A lot of good work going on. And when I first started working in In Nicaragua, here's another great tricycle. This is Southern Africa. This is Zambia. And this guy also builds wheelchairs. He rides this thing to work, and then he builds wheelchairs for all of his brothers and sisters who are a little bit more disabled than he is, can't handle the tricycle very well, need a wheelchair more than he does. Yeah, sometimes he had as many as five passengers on. Now he has three passengers on, this three kids on the back of the tricycle. When I first visited Nicaragua in 1979, I met these four kids who were sharing one wheelchair, and they started criticizing what I had done in designing my own chair. It was clear from the predictions they made of upcoming failures of my chair, all of which I knew were correct. I knew my chair had some weak spots because I had already broken a couple of the spots and broken a lot of previous chairs. It was clear that they knew more than the U.S. industry put together. These four teenage boys who had busted one chair up, it had 20 fractures in the frame. It was an American throwaway. Every time it broke, they would take it to the neighborhood blacksmith and work with that blacksmith and figure out how to reinforce it so it wouldn't break again. And then they would reinforce the other side of the chair because they knew it was just as weak as the part they had just broken. I had been looking all over the U.S. and hadn't found the kind of help I needed to make my own chair better. Hadn't found in the industry or among the users, I hadn't found people working seriously on the basic breakdown problems of everyday folding wheelchairs. This is one of my friends in India. He's riding a homemade chair. It's an old design, again from the 1940s, the basic hospital box. But at least he's reinforced it to the point where he's ridden that chair 15 years with no serious problem. He's made it so it stands up. And this is the kind of people I needed to help me make my chairs so that they wouldn't break down and then eventually start working toward making them stronger. This is some of the best of what we have coming out of this country. This is the wheelchair made in or originally designed in Los Angeles by the Free Wheelchair Mission. A guy had a vision, and God told him to build a chair that the optimum wheelchair would be one made out of a $3 plastic lawn chair. One of the worst chairs for any of us with spinal cord injury to sit in. One of the worst chairs for anybody to sit in 16 hours a day, regardless whether they have a disability or not. It puts you into a slouch. It has hard surfaces. And it's weak. It cracks. Just taking a shower, I've had three of those fall apart underneath me in various countries when that's the only shower chair that's available. And over 100,000 of those are out there. And every time this guy makes a speech, the people at MIT blush because he tells people that he had done such a good engineering job because he has a PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT. MIT has some of the best work going on in wheelchair design today. Those guys just don't want to talk about this. Here's what happens to a lot of American wheelchairs when they go into rougher terrain. Get outside the paved cities. Get away from New York City or Palo Alto. This one was just a year in Ethiopia. The rubber in the front wheel broke down completely. This one amazingly still has a good bearing in it. Though the same chair, the other wheel, had lost its bearings. These are 150-pound bearings. And just not suited. They're skateboard bearings, same size. The 8 by 22 millimeter bearings, teeny little things, not made for the shock loads of wheelchair use, not made for the kind of dirt and water that wheelchair wheels roll in every day, and especially in rural areas. So the rubber broke down. The other one, the whole middle of the front wheel had been worn away once the bearings gave way. They made a bearing out of wood, and that lasted much longer than the imported bearing had. They just took a stick of wood, shoved it into the remains of the wheel, bored a hole in it, and that was their bearing. Of course, they knew what kind of wood to use, a very, very good hardwood, and like the bearings that are used on ships' propellers until today. It was excellent. When I first started, I went looking. As soon as we had our first chairs in Nicaragua, first couple of years, all of us went looking for other people who had done wheelchair design. And one of the first groups we ran into was these fellows in Philippines, a group of, at that time, 20 men and women, all wheelchair riders, who since 1976 have built their own chairs. And boy, do they have some nice designs. All the way back to 1981 when I met them, they had sports chairs that left ours in the dust. Beautiful sports chairs, basketball chairs. They didn't play tennis in them, but they would run the marathons. They weren't allowed to enter, so they would bypass the checkpoints and still beat the runners. This is Nicaragua. This fellow, until today, is still building chairs. Here he's finishing sanding for plating a set of hand rims that have been hand bent around a wooden form. We originally learned how to bend good circles out of steel tubing by hand from a fellow who made restaurant tables with rings of steel tubing to support the little round tabletop. And he did it by filing a groove in the tree outside his shop, driving a big staple into the tree, put the tubing onto the staple, walk around the tree, and that made a very, very good circle of tubing. Of course, he had to chop the tree off to get the. But it's okay. The tree would, after he filed the groove in the tree, the tree was dead anyway. Yeah, this guy has four kids. He rides one of those tricycles to and from work every day. He has to climb a steep creek bed every day. And he cannot do it unless his pedals are out of phase and unless he has a fairly low gear. But it doesn't matter. He can go very fast on that tricycle and can carry all of his kids at once as well. Here's our latest chair. A regular wheelchair has a 15-inch long wheelbase, 26-inch long high center of gravity, right above it, your belly button is where it is. That's the equivalent of a Chevrolet that's over three stories tall, if you take the ratio of the track length to the height of the center of gravity. If you're driving that Chevrolet and you put on the brakes, it falls over frontwards. Same thing happens to wheelchairs. The biggest cause of injury to wheelchair riders in the U.S. today is falling over frontwards because the chairs are so unstable, so short. If you run into a crack in the sidewalk, the chair tips forward, and broken hips, broken femurs, concussions, all kinds of injuries come from that. Our first chairs had the same short wheelbase. We stretched it up to 16 or 17 inches. That made some difference. Then we dropped the seat down a bit at the back. We couldn't drop the whole seat down because the seat height is really determined by the length of your calves. So your knee height is kind of fixed. You need some ground clearance under the footrest. You can't lower them anymore. So we tipped the the chair back a bit so as to lower the center of gravity and to move the center of gravity further back from the front wheels made a big difference. In my personal riding, in the 10, 15 years that I rode those chairs, I fell only about half as many times as I did with the older style, more erect chairs. But again, with the short wheelbases. So I was falling only two or three times a year, usually at night in the rain when I was in a rush to get out of the rain, hit a crack in the sidewalk, and bam, on my face. Did some experimenting later with lengthening the wheelchair. See how long it has to be before it stops tipping over forward. Turned out it wasn't that much, didn't need to be that much longer. If you increase the wheelbase from 15 inches to 20 inches, unless you're going really fast, there's not enough energy to lift you up and over that pivot point when you ram into an obstacle with that chair. And so our latest so-called Rough Riders, latest wheelchairs now have a 21-plus inch wheelbase, a little extra, and they pretty much don't fall anymore. That worked very nicely. Here you can see a little of the framework. Very simple. We like curves. They actually lessen the peak shock loads just a little. Yes. The wheelbase is track length, the distance from where the front wheel touches the ground to where the back wheel touches the ground. And again, increasing that from the old typical 15 inches to an hour 20 inches plus makes all the difference. That's as much as it may need. We add a little camber to the rear wheels, which was interestingly invented by women in the early 70s who were racing against men in the national wheelchair races. There was a big difference between the record times for men and women. The men believe they all know why that was, because these women are weak. But these two women in 1974 put radical camber on their chair. They were required to ride the chair from the Monopoly Company at the time to enter the races, but there was nothing about just bending it out at the bottom so the wheels had radical camber. They're much further apart at the bottom than at the top. They beat most of the men. They set a whole new set of records. The next year, the men were doing it as well. And that gives you much more speed because you're now pushing straight out from your shoulder instead of reaching out and pushing down. Just the ergonomics become totally different, much, much better. It also gives it more lateral stability. It's harder to tip the chair over backwards. Much, much more stable on a side slope or over very rough ground. At the same time, we were all making our chairs less stable against tipping over backwards, moving our axles as far forward as we could get away with without tipping backwards, so as to take weight off the front wheels, make the chairs less likely to tip, and getting rid of the biggest waste factor in wheelchair propulsion, the downhill turning. The weight on the front wheels always pulls them downhill, the edge of the road where we're generally stuck, is always tilted for drainage. And so we have to drag one hand and push only with the other in order to go in a straight line. Waste more than half of our energy on a typical outdoor run, especially on our older style wheelchair with a third of its weight on the front wheels. So we would move our wheels forward. The Rough Rider here and a lot of the new chairs that came in the U.S. in the early 80s, the lightweight revolution, they all have an adjustable rear axle position where you can move the rear axle, step it forward, start with it back, learn how to ride, learn how to balance, then move it forward as far as you can get away with. It's just a learning thing. It makes it riskier. Some people hit their head on the pavement when they tip over backwards when they're trying to climb a curb and they miss. Leaving the push handles on the wheelchair helps protect you. But some people build chairs now with no push handles either, so that partly so that people don't come up behind you and grab you unexpectedly and change your direction. And I'm hoping somebody will come up with a very nice design of retractable handle. One of those long since, the problem has been around. There have been a few retractable handles that individuals have made, but it's never been good enough. They've never been good enough, light enough, simple enough, cheap enough, that they've stayed on the market. The regular push handle costs almost nothing. You just have to bend the tube if you're making a tubular metal wheelchair. The front wheels. We were able to put the front wheels under the toes and increase the track length from 15 to 20 plus inches by finding a design in Zimbabwe that could be made small enough to put under the toes without raising your knees. You could still put your legs under the table. But that wouldn't get stuck in all the little chuck holes and culverts and drainage grates. This is the Zimbabwe wheel. We call it the Zimbabwe wheel. It was designed probably 30 years ago for push carts in Zimbabwe. Welcome. But it was a big 14-inch size. It was to replace pneumatic wheels, wheelbarrow-style wheels that would wear out in less than a year, that were very expensive once imported to Zimbabwe. This one they made locally in an auto tire retread shop. That's a technology that the poorest countries all have, because they all have to retread their tires. The poorer they are, the more they need to retread. And we were very happy to find this. 1988, I saw this on a push cart in the marketplace in Harare. Eventually we shrunk it down to, this is about 4 1/3 inches in diameter, 110 millimeters. And we put a regular bicycle hub in the middle, a 60-cent bicycle hub, complete with bearings and axle. That's the price all over the world. And it's gotta be one of the strongest, most dirt-resistant, most easily repairable bearing types in the world. We've tried to use them on the rear, but we're still, because there are variations in the hardness of the parts we can get in developing countries, we've had some failures that have pushed us back to now we're using Toyota alternator bearings, or Hyundai, available everywhere, and not too expensive, and it's, again, a good 1,000-pound bearing. So, when we, there's the bicycle hub in the middle of the Zimbabwe wheel. Let me pass samples of Zimbabwe. This one's smaller, lighter, a nicer design in a way. It's got one of our old forks on it, a bar stock fork. Now we're making all tubular forks. They're stronger and lighter at the same time. And this one is the one we're now using, but it should be lighter. Trouble making molds. The first ones we had made, those are from Tanzania. This one is from India. And you can grab that wheel and twist it around. There's very little there. It's just like an hourglass shape. Ingenious design. Works beautifully on the push carts. Works beautifully on the front of our chairs. And there's what our chair will do. This is one of the wheelchair builders in Colombia, Cali, Colombia. And he's riding down about a 10-inch curb. He can go down a bigger one than I dare to. If I was going down that, I would only dare go down balanced on my rear wheels. But he has a little lower disability level than me, about a T10, so he doesn't fall forward quite so quickly when he rides down a really high curb. But he can go down a curb that high without any fear of falling forward, because his wheelbase is just long enough.
Can you back up it?
No. No.
It looks like he almost could.
I used to back up it, though. Here's what it takes to back up that curb. My chair from 1977 to 1984 was a full four-wheel drive manually propelled wheelchair using Ezekiel wheels on the front. And this is my favorite wheel for wheelchairs for the front. Whichever roller is on the ground goes sideways. Well, the whole wheel can go forward and backward. With a bike chain between the front and the rear wheels, I had a full four-wheel drive. And I had a lot of fun with this wheel until the 12 sealed bearings inside this wheel, two in each roller, eventually failed. I'd ridden in the ocean too much, and saltwater had gotten through the seals. But it worked nicely. It wasn't as good as it could have been. I'd love to see somebody figure out ways to make these much better. The VA here in Palo Alto used them on an electric chair in the early 80s. Those were never light enough for a manual chair. They were beautifully made, but not light enough. I'll pass this around as well. If anybody has any flashes on this. This wheel, by the way, it's called the Ezekiel wheel because it's, if you read Ezekiel 10:10 in the Old Testament, according to some NASA scientists who in the 60s retranslated some of the older versions of the Old Testament, put together various versions and found what they thought was a better translation. Ezekiel 10:10 is a news account of a spacecraft landing on Earth that's in the form of this wheel. It's a wheel with four faces. Every face has four eyes. It's a four-roller Ezekiel, the simplest possible form. And boy, does it go on a wheelchair. And that one, the front, you go up backwards up a curb, the front wheels push you up, and I could actually ride up.
But the neat thing about those wheels is that you don't need a caster wheel in front.
Right, you don't need a caster wheel at all. You just put the footrest right between the front wheels. You don't need all that swivel space for the caster. And so I can have as short a wheelchair as I have now, but as long a wheelbase at the same time. And low knees. Get under tables. I can put the footrests even lower than this one. My footrests have to be 4.5 inches high to clear my front wheel swiveling on this one. On that one, you can put them as low as you want. They're not hanging out ahead, so they're not going to catch on everything. The chair I rode for those 7 years had only about 1.5 inches of footrest clearance. Tight little package. I don't have any now. I still have the chair, though. Up in Oakland. Here's some of the fellows in India building the Rough Rider. They made these for distribution in Afghanistan. Here's how we bend the hand rims. It was wood. Now we're making them out of steel. This is just a simple arc of steel that you wrap the hand rim around. You bend it, say, 45 degrees, 60 degrees. You feed the tubing in, you bend it again, you feed the tubing in, you bend it again. You start with a 20-foot, 6-meter piece of tubing, the world standard length. You bend it around and around, and you end up with a coil of four hand rims, two wheelchairs worth. And you cut them apart with a hacksaw. You take the scraps from the end, you shrink them and put them in the ends of the tube to join the ends of the tube, and then you can weld them with any kind of welding, pretty much. Makes a very nice, very true hand rim. Very simple. Took us years to figure that out. To get from wrapping around the tree to something that we could make cheap and simple and distribute easily to these little shops. And here's a front picture of our chair. We're using the same folding frame that most of the folding frames in the U.S. now use. A 1933 patent, updated in a 1944 patent. A couple of nice, simple ways of doing it. It's like the captain chair with a single X-brace underneath, patented in 1862. That one was all wood. And a very nice way of making a folding frame. How's our time?
We've got about 15 minutes.
Okay. Feel free to interrupt at any time with any other questions. Our footrests, we make folding chairs. In this country, most of the chairs of the more sporty chairs, the really good ones don't fold. The back may fold down and the wheels come off. The removable wheels on most of the chairs here, though, don't work very well in very dusty or dirty environments. We've had some serious accidents with the wheels falling off because they get jammed up with dirt inside the locking mechanism, inside the axle. And people really do need folding chairs, or need chairs that will break down somehow. A chair that has no removable parts is advantageous because you either lose the whole chair or you lose nothing. Here, with American chairs, often they'll lose an armrest, a leg rest, a removable wheel halfway to their destination when the chair is up on the roof of the bus. So we've made flip-up footrests and then used that folding X-brace so as to fold the chair up. Our chairs typically weigh 40 pounds. The old Americans weighed closer to 50. The new American ones that fold, the aluminum ones, are typically 30 to 34 pounds. So we're not that much higher in weight than where we are here. Though, of course, you can now buy a titanium chair for as little as about 14 pounds is the latest weight. The amazing new Quickie. Oh, that one isn't even titanium. It's aluminum. They finally got their hardening procedures together where they make the chair first and harden it later, and they can make it much lighter. There's our footrest. Injuries to people's feet. I have several friends in this country with amputated feet from gangrene, from infections, from their foot serving as their front bumper. And we now make footrests that come all the way around the front of the foot and give you not only good protection, but you can ram into things a lot harder if you need to move them. If you need to move a piano, there's a good footrest to have. There's some of the details of our front fork construction, the pivoting bearings, the swivel bearings. This is one of our now 30-year-long wheelchair builders in Nicaragua, who's been my strongest critic from the very beginning of this project. Here she is, strength testing a front fork of a South African wheelchair. She's got the fork in the vise and a 3-foot-long cheater pipe over the stem of the fork. She's pulling on the end of it with a fish scale, nice fish scale that records the maximum force you've applied, so you don't have to watch it where you pull. And she found that the South African design, which was bar stock instead of tubular, even though it weighed exactly twice as much as the design that we were offering them, it was only 2/3 as strong and considerably too weak to stand up. Here's testing equipment at San Francisco State. The chair rattles over the bumps on these treadmill rollers. It has two 12-inch diameter rollers underneath the wheels with half-inch high bumps on the rollers. We put a 220-pound, 100-kilogram dummy in the chair. We're soon to up that weight and, again, run at 400,000 cycles. Runs day and night for better part of a week. And, yes, we've had some surprise failures. It's a great way to find out if people's welding quality is as high as they think it is, and whether their design shortcuts dare to be applied or not. All the American chairs have to pass this test now. And we know it's a pretty good test because when the test was new, most of them flunked, just like they were flunking in the field. This test is resulting in giveaway chairs being a little better in the third world, but the tests have weaknesses as well. The American standard is 200,000 cycles. It's not enough, really. We need them tougher. This is Vietnam, where we're now working with a bigger shop. It has 80 employees and has made some thousands of chairs. They thousands of chairs every year. Yep, we're working with on a new fixture. The Vietnamese folks are longtime wheelchair builders, have made hospital chairs for 15 years and came with a lot of experience from other industries before that. They're teaching us a lot about fixture making to hold the precision of the chair more accurately than we're used to. Yep. Some this is Philippines. Taking the technology from Vietnam and applying it to the shop that started in 1976 in the Philippines. Cushions. Most wheelchair, most people with spinal cord injuries die within a couple of years, and most of them die of pressure sores. In the Philippines, they came up now some 25 more years ago with one made out of a wheelchair cushion made out of folded bicycle inner tubes. It works fairly well. It's fairly small. It doesn't give you full postural support. The ergonomics are not great, but the pressure distribution is good enough that a lot of people are surviving. They may sit in a slouch, but they're still alive. And when the imported good cushions cost $200 to $500, well, we need something else. And Laurel, could you pull this cushion out in this direction if I lift up?
Yep.
So trying to improve on that, we've come up working in Nicaragua with one that combines some of the $500 American technology. We make a nice base for the cushion out of stiff foam. This foam is sold in Nicaragua for soles on shoes. We layer it up and glue it together. Combining that for the frame and for the front section under your thighs, and for a seating platform to transfer in and out of the chair. You need something very stable to get in and out of the chair. We've combined that with the inner tube out of a Toyota. It's a 15-inch inner tube. And these things cost only $4.50 in Nicaragua retail. Works very well. We only fill it halfway with air, fold it more or less correctly. And here's, we've extended the filler so you can adjust the air while you're sitting in the chair. I've been riding this for a year now. So far, so good. And I'm pretty sensitive to pressure sores. I've had them before from some of those fancy American cushions included. So, I don't know, I could pass this around. One of the issues is that this is waterproof. So this cover is made out of 5-6 layers of T-shirt, recycled American T-shirt with Velcro to hold it in place. And that's, again, taking the Philippine idea, a stroke of genius of somebody in the 70s, and just trying it out with a bigger inner tube. And that idea came from one of the riders in Nicaragua. Just a flash. So why are you wasting your time with those bicycle tubes? They're not big enough. And there it went. See, where the... Yes, yes. Yes, the brake. It's a cam brake.
Okay.
Works very well. We need to redesign it because some of our users are complaining, but it works very, very well. I can apply it with one finger. It takes 5 pounds to apply, and it takes me 30, 40 pounds to get the wheel to skid a little bit. It holds very, very well when you're transferring.
Sure.
Yep. And Roger, you can check out my brake afterwards. Let's see, where are we? There it is. There's the brake. Yeah, that was derived from a German design of maybe 30, 40 years ago. A very nice design. They did it fancier. Theirs, of course, looks a lot better too. One of the complaints is that this looks like a Rube Goldberg contraption. It's got too many. It's made out of simple bent rod, very cheap. Once you have a form for bending it, you can make one of those in about 5 minutes, including welding. Very quick to manufacture, but kind of ugly. And the handle, when the brake is turned off, sticks out ahead too far, catches on things. And also, it's too low. I have to lean. If I'm sitting up, I can't reach it. I have to lean forward to get it. I would like to have something that doesn't stick out, that just works close by. And we have some ideas, but none of them have worked yet. That's an unsolved problem. Up. Oh, this was Kenya. I got stuck in Kenya for 5 months by spilling boiling water on my feet. And boy, was it a great opportunity to spend real time in the shop. And I took full advantage of it. I refused to enter a hospital. I just worked every day with my feet propped up. Why not? We modified a wheelchair so it had elevating leg rest. And here we're playing a game. This is a favorite of the people in Kenya. They make a fence out of ropes. It's like a checkered fence, like big chicken wire, with about 1 by 2 foot holes through the chicken wire, and everybody has to pass through it. And you have to go through the top holes, not the bottom holes. And so here they were shoving me through the hole. I was being nearly strangled, but it was fun. This is one of the women. She came up with so many good ideas. This is a woman who's a shoemaker. And she was helping me with shoe designs so that I could cure my feet and weld at the same time. I needed to protect my feet, but I couldn't have any pressure on them at all. It was third-degree burns on the top of my foot. They're nicely healed now, partly thanks to her and her shoemaking skills. Some American doctors have been very interested in copying that design, and maybe it'll happen if we can find any shoemakers here who will do it. It was a sole made out of this same hard foam, and then a regular shoe, like a sandal, but a completely covered sandal that had the part around your ankle closed with Velcro, the part over your toes separately closed with Velcro, but you could close it loose over your toes so that nothing touched the top of your foot at all. It had a strap around the ankle, and that was pretty much all it touched. Yes. You know Amy Smith?
Amy Smith.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right by the way that people talk about the lawn chair, wheelchair. So I was wondering, maybe I missed this in your introduction, but have you worked with them at all?
I go there every...
I
spend a whole week every spring in Amos's class helping them design third world wheelchairs.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep, okay. And it's nothing but fun.
Yeah, it sounds like they
could definitely use some of your... Yeah. Now, Amos has worked with us out here many times. He brings his chairs out here to test on our test equipment.
Oh, okay.
Yep, it's a great bunch there.
Yeah, it's
not... And they've bred another MacArthur winner as well. Amy.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah. That's great. Yes.
So what are we going to do in Haiti?
I wish I was there today with $1 million to work with. At first I would buy hundreds of Coleman air mattresses, the twin-size thick air mattresses. People with spinal cord injury are dying fast from pressure sores there. And they're not ready for wheelchairs yet. They're dying of bed sores, really. I don't know. We're sending a bunch of chairs and the details of the cushion and so forth. We're sending a few hundred chairs there from other countries, various countries, South Africa, Vietnam, Central America. But that's not dealing with the imminent threat. It's tough. A lot of people are there who know spinal cord injury and who know how to address an amputation so that it won't result in further gangrene or infections. There's some really good work going on there right now. But that's going to be hard.
Yeah. Could you talk very briefly about your class?
Yes, we have a class at San Francisco State, Engineering 620, Wheelchair Design and Construction. Every group of students builds one of our off-road chairs complete from scratch, sewing the fabric, spoking the wheels, bending the tubing, cutting, welding, everything. And we make the hubs, we make the brakes, the forks, the front, the footrests, the folding frames, everything. And a good number of people, well, there are several people here from here at Stanford who came and took that course during or after they were here. And now they're in. One of them now lives in South Africa and works full-time on wheelchair design, travels from there to India, other parts of Africa. Several other Stanford students are working with us in other ways, traveling and building. But that's kind of it's a combination of an intro course for gringos and a way to bring in people from other countries who end up leaving with not only sample chairs, but jigs and fixtures to help them set up their own shops. And it's also our first test bed for all the new ideas. Somebody comes up with an improved brake, for example. One in Nicaragua just got sent to me. We're going to probably build this semester's chair with a whole different kind of brake. And we'll test it in many ways. We'll see whether it's easily fabricated by people who've never done it before and who have limited experience. We'll see whether it's cheap, simple. Then we'll smash it and see if it's strong enough. And of course, all those students get trained in wheelchair riding as well. In fact, you can see all about it on the Lehrer NewsHour today. I heard it on the radio on the way here. They filmed this a week ago. Mostly talking about Haiti, but listen to the NewsHour. 6:30 it'll be on. That'll tell you all about the class.
One final question.
What are some of the highest priorities that still have room for improvement? What are some of the areas that you think is
the best? There are so many. Wheelchairs are still wheelchairs. They're only capable of climbing at very best a 1 in 4 or so slope, depending on the person. Our chairs are now stable on 1 in 3 even, but I can tack up that kind of hill. But again, it depends on the person's disability and strength and balance and all of those things. I'm a high para, kind of on the line between para and quad, T2. Other people can go a little bit more off-road than me, but we'd like to see chairs where you can really go off-road. And it's a combination of power and balance and traction. There's a nice new two-speed hand rim called the Magic Wheel in the U.S. And I've tested that and liked it. It gives you a 2-to-1 gear reduction when you pop it into low gear. And it really is better control when you're on very steep, rough terrain. Downside is it's pretty complex inside. It's a planetary gear system. It costs $5,000 for a pair of wheels, plus whatever you spend on the wheelchair. But one of my students just came up with one that he built last semester, and it actually worked that it'll cost $50. And it's all made out of bicycle parts. He basically took the magic wheel and turned it into a two-hand rim one. One hand rim is low gear. The other hand rim is in regular gear. And but then once you've got a lot more thrust, then you need to deal with balance and traction. If somebody can come up with an omnidirectional wheel that's appropriate to build in Uganda, that has a lot of potential for that chair combined with a two-speed hand rim would just be a bear. It would plow snow, literally.
I want to thank Ralph again for coming and visiting with us and presenting, and it was really great to see him again. It's been a while, since last year, but I'm very pleased that he was here and able to present to you. So let's thank Ralph again. Also mentioned that there's an opportunity to dine with Ralph at Max's. Anybody who wants to take advantage of that, let me know so the first person who gets there can get the table for the right number of people. How many might be interested in doing that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, great. Thank you.
Was that actually amplifying me?
Oh no, I was just recording.